Something that, what the hell was I gonna say? Son of a bitch.
Engage.
The Rancor's brothel. Great Scott.
Get off my plane.
Hello and welcome to brand new issue of the Rancor's Brothel. I'm your co-host, Matt.
And I'm your co-host, Cody.
This week we have a fun topic that we'll get to in a little bit here. But first of all, Cody, let's thank our musical interlude, our opening theme.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Ian Shannon, Migrant Audio. Check him out on Facebook, Sleep for the Weary. He does all kinds of cool stuff and cool music and whatnot. And Ian, if you're listening, we may have future projects for you, so be prepared.
I like it. Cody, what's new? What's up, man?
Oh, not too much. I just got done. We're recording on Sunday, so I just watched the United States get a tie in their World Cup match in the last 30 seconds of the match. So a little disappointed in the great country that is America right now.
Hey, that reminds me. Who gives a shit?
That's fair.
Sorry, I'm just kidding.
Lucas out there. Lucas is feeling my pain right now, but it's okay.
You both just so weird.
Sports. It's a thing. There are sports nerds.
Yeah, well, enjoy that. They all have jobs on ESPN.
That's true. Probably
I mean,
most
of them. I like some sports stuff, but I don't know. I played 1 year of youth soccer, and that was it. I was done.
It's a weird sport. I have a lot of problems with it. But that being said, you gotta represent when you're on the international stage. So feeling a little let down by Team USA, but that's okay. We got time to make it up. One more match. So it'll be good. And yourself, sir, what's going on?
Oh, nothing too much. My son is dressed up like the Hulk right now and threatening to hit me. So that's a thing.
So when we hear
I imagine you'll notice a diminished amount of cursing in this podcast today.
Brought to you by the presence of Joe.
Fair enough. I'll probably say things like bologna sausage and frack.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. No worries.
That's how I code myself. Cody.
Yes.
What you been reading, man?
Well.
Or do you want me to go first? Because you always talk for 20 hours.
I know. You got to interrupt me with some questions so I don't ramble quite so much.
No, it's not that you ramble. It's that you read a lot.
I do.
And since we took last week off, that means there's now 2 weeks worth of books for you to talk about.
There is, but I am, dear listeners, I am taking a slight break from that. Because for those of you in the know, and those of you who came, I will take this public forum here to thank you all for everyone who helped me out. I had a surprise party for my wife, who just graduated with her master's degree last month. So I want to thank everybody for coming, but it was a huge deal and I had to keep it from her. So I didn't read nearly as many books as I normally would. So I'm even farther behind now from not having an episode and then now spending a week preparing for this surprise party. So slight change here. I want to talk a little bit about the Dresden Files because I'm trying to catch up on those. So are you familiar with the Dresden Files at all?
Insofar that I used to run the Lid store at the airport, and a customer left his copy there, and he was using the receipt as a bookmark.
Nice.
And there's a chain of bookstores in airports throughout America where you can purchase a book, and then if you've read it, you purchase an agreement to where you can just return it for like 80% of its value. So I just took the receipt and returned it and kept the money. And that has been my Dresden experience.
Gotcha. Fair enough. So
I touched a book once and resold it.
Fair enough. I gotcha. I gotcha. That's okay. Well,
now let me just, as I understand it, he's a magical detective.
Yeah. What's really brilliant about this is that anytime I talk about this series with other people who love it. If they also write or are interested in it, this idea is so freaking brilliant. I don't know why no one else has done it before. Because what they've done is it's your classic sort of, detective noir, you know, whodunit, Agatha Christie type story. But it takes place in the first person, and you have Harry Dresden, who is a consulting wizard. So he works with random people off the street, or a lot of times a special division from Chicago PD to solve cases that are a bit outside the norm. So it's really brilliant because it takes that very, very basic detective story, but puts that little bit of a magical spin on it. So he's, you know, he's using thaumaturgy, he's throwing fire tornadoes or, you know, lightning bolts at people. It's very cool, especially because from the first person, you get all those wonderful little story moments where he's like, you know, oh, you know, screw you, evil demon. And meanwhile, he's trembling in his mind because he's like, oh God, what do I do next? That kind of thing. Which is always a lot of fun, I think, in storytelling. When you can get inside the character's head literally and the author can, you know, give you some sort of preview of what it's like being that character.
All right. I can live with that.
And it's, I think he's coming to Gen Con this year, which is one of the reasons why, Jim Butcher, the author.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the reasons why I've been, trying to catch up with the series so I can get the latest book that just came out, 2 weeks ago, I think, by him. But what's really sort of interesting about it, each book seems to take place about a year from the previous book. So instead of having, you know, case after case after case back to back to back, there's some time for emotional and physical healing and some time for the characters to change. So each time you jump into the next book, it's the same, but everything can be shifted based on, you know, what has come before it. You know what I mean? There's that adjustment period. So even though you could pick up any of the books and run with the case he's working on, you do get a nice sort of view all the way across of the story, which is kind of cool.
Very nice. Well, what would you recommend for a non Dresden reader? Like, what's the draw?
I think it's the fact that I've pushed my wife into it a little bit. She's just read a little bit of the first book, which is called Stormfront. And I think the draw is really that you get to be that wizard. You get to be in their mindset. He's a funny guy. He's interesting. He has sort of a hero complex. He likes to defend women. So Butcher writes a very lovable character. And you get to jump into his head. You know, it's all first-person pronouns and whatnot. And you get to be inside his head, see what he sees, feel what he feels, and go through that experience. So much like, a little bit like the Harry Potter world, you're getting a glimpse into something that is underneath the surface of everyday life, which I think is always the draw for fantasy stuff.
Sounds awesome.
It is good.
I can live with that.
I highly recommend it.
Anything else you've been reading?
Oh, anything else?
How's Batman Eternal doing?
Batman Eternal? Still good. I'm trying to think where I'm at. Issue 8? Of course, I'm 2 weeks behind, but it is, the plot is continuing to thicken. I'm beginning to get worried if it continues to thicken more, we may have too many cooks spoiling the soup. But as of right now, solid storytelling. Penguin's getting destroyed by Falcone coming in, so it is, we got some gang warfare going on. Professor Pig's hanging out still. He's recovered from the earlier issues where he seemed to be the patsy of Falcone, so we'll see what happens. It's going to get bloody and violent.
Awesome. Just the way we like our Batman.
It's true. We like a violent Batman. Yourself.
I have been reading, I finally was able to go pick up my comics, which was awesome.
Always a good thing.
So, I don't know, backed up maybe 6 weeks. And I had started a poll as soon as they said, like, okay, I know I tout myself as a huge Wolverine fan.
Right.
But I've never put the Wolverine on my poll.
Gotcha.
Cause something that I don't like to do with polls is, I mean, like, well, okay, so, like, Wolverine's in Wolverine, and he's also an X-Man, and he's, you know, an Avenger, and if I want to follow a continuous story, I've got to spend a lot of money every week.
This is true.
So that's why I usually wait for trades. Now, when there's a Wolverine one-off, I'm all about it. Like, I loved The Origins 2. That was a great little five-issue series, so I made sure I grabbed that. So I just put Wolverine on my poll, like a month or two ago, because of the upcoming death of Wolverine, and that will happen in the pages of
Wolverine. Paul Cornell, I think, right?
I think that's right. I don't have it in front of me.
Pretty sure Paul Cornell.
Sounds right. So I've just been enjoying that. You know, I'm behind because I wait for trade. So, you know, I haven't been following the whole he lost his healing powers. Mm. You're the one that told me about it.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know, it's been very compelling and interesting. They're back in Madripoor right now. Mm-hmm. He is working undercover for S.H.I.E.L.D. With a bad guy named The Offer.
Mm, yes.
And The Offer's in bed with Sabretooth. Sabretooth rules all of Madripoor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Paul Cornell and Stegman who do that book, which I've been reading. It is quite good.
Very good. So, we got 2 months left until he dies?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
It doesn't seem like it's going to be that hard. right now, he is on the island of, the Island of Death's Relaxation with the Iron Fist.
Hmm.
And it's the place where death goes to relax. And as we know in the Marvel Universe, death is a woman.
Yes.
And so he has, like, in the most recent issue, he made it to the center of a maze in the middle of this island and, is caught up to death. And she is giving him a bunch of shit. Because he has killed a lot of people and has kept her pockets full, if you will.
Right.
and then a bunch of bad guys, Sabretooth's bad guys, the Hand. He's in charge of the Hand now.
Mm-hmm.
The Hand drops on the island. People, the cool thing about this island, the way they explain it, is that people aren't allowed to die there because death lives there.
Kind of like one of those don't shit where you eat kind of things.
Yeah, so anybody with a terminal illness or once you reach a certain age, you have to leave the island. You're not allowed to stay there.
Gotcha.
So it'll be kind of cool if that's the setting for the death of Wolverine.
Hmm.
Make him the first person to die in this land or something. I don't know. It's exciting as shit, though. It's really cool. And for the record, I could say shit because Joe left the room.
Fair enough.
For those concerned parents out there. I picked up, the Batman 66 and Green Hornet.
Oh, how is that? I've been really interested, because that's the Smith is doing that, right?
Yeah, Kevin Smith and Ralph Garman with covers painted by Alex Ross. I'm holding up the camera and showing Mr. Cody right now.
Yeah, I love that cover. It's beautiful.
It is badass. I haven't read it yet. I just have obtained it.
Now,
they did, on one of the podcasts, on Fat Man on Batman, Kevin and Ralph read it. They enact it with an audience. So I want my first time of sitting down and reading it, I want the podcast going. Like, I want to follow along.
Fair enough. I can respect that.
They even have it set up where it's like, you know that song, that little piece of, I don't know, just segue music when scenes would change in the old Batman show? That do-do-do-do-do-do-do. When they play that, that's when you turn the page. It's just shit. Just funny shit.
That's awesome.
So yeah. So I'm holding off on that one. It's like I don't know. It's like I bought a really special pint of Ben and Jerry's that I'm saving. You know?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Or it's like the last of the six pack of Smittix. I want to save it.
So have you actually seen the original crossover that they did for 60s Television?
Green Hornet? No.
We should do a riff track of that. I don't know if I still have a copy of that. I think I do somewhere of the original. I think it was like a 3-part episode or something. And it's ridiculous. I don't remember what the story is. It's something about they end up going through some sort of machine that turns Green Hornet and Bruce Lee into giant stamps or something. The guy who played Mud from the original Star Trek is the bad guy. And he's like wearing pink all the time. Has the stupid handlebar mustache. It's just off the wall ridiculous. It's very, very funny.
Very campy.
Yes. Definitely. I mean, it's even extremely campy for a Batman episode. It's hilarious.
Now that is saying something.
It is. It just makes no sense. Because the Green Hornet show was at least semi-realistic. That episode is just, that crossover is just ridiculous. I love it.
Hey, you know, another comic that's out there right now that you should all obtain is Bovine. It's on the shelf right now at Android's Dungeon in Avon, Indiana. The corner of 36 and Gable Drive. You should go pick that up. That's a great one.
Yeah, I have heard good things.
Sorry.
Critically reviewed by some.
By 4 people who've read it. And then also Walking Dead. My little health troubles that prevented me from working and not having money to go buy my comics occurred right after the war with Negan in the Walking Dead universe. And these first 2 issues, when I was able to pick them up, I was so surprised. It takes place, like, it's got to be a year in the future at least.
Mm.
And it's it seems that right now it's not a story of survival anymore. It's a story of thriving.
Right.
In their community. And it's just, if you've been reading the first, whatever we're at, 124 issues of The Walking Dead, these last two issues just flip everything on your head.
Hmm.
So that's been a lot of fun to go through all that. The really great scene in it, too, where they, on horseback, when a herd of zombies, so, like, if a zombie's walking and it sees another zombie walking, it'll follow that zombie because it's thinking that zombie knows where there's food. And so they end up, as they cross, you know, back and forth across the country, they become these massive herds, which, even if you're hiding in behind walls and they can't see you or smell you or nothing, they can still just easily knock down the wall with a press of 100,000 bodies.
Right.
So what they're doing is they're herding them like sheep, just being on horseback. The only difference is the sheep don't walk towards the humans. They walk away. The zombies, of course, walk towards you. So they take smaller herds, combine them into these super herds, and drive them towards the coastline.
Gotcha.
And it's just a real interesting thing to see as it's illustrated in the book. And I don't know. It's just pretty cool. So the story's getting really interesting right now. I'm looking forward to it. Because after a while, it's like, okay, how many more bad people can we find and kill? And how many more zombies are going to eat my friends?
Well, see, I wonder if, how many of Romero's dead movies have you seen? Have you seen all of them?
All six.
Okay. What I always thought was really interesting was, I'm trying to remember which one it is. I think it's Land of the Dead. Mm-hmm. Isn't it that one where
living on an island?
Yeah, and one of them starts becoming, like, semi-intelligent or whatever.
Uh-huh, yeah.
See, I wonder if that might be what they're doing with The Walking Dead. Not necessarily that the walkers are going to suddenly become sentient, which I always thought was silly, but the fact that they're now being herded and manipulated almost like tools. Mm-hmm. What if you could use them? You know what I mean? Or what if you can manipulate them in further ways? You know, they
like
become
tie a plow to one and just have it pull across the field.
Or, you know, suddenly you have a rival encampment or something, and so what do? You snatch a whole bunch of them up and you know helicopter them in and drop them or something. You know, I don't know. I just wonder what they're going to do.
That was done in the show.
Oh, really?
Where the governor took a trailer full of zombies, unlocked the trailer door, and, like, they just pushed it through the gate of the prison.
Nice.
And then in this, the war that just happened with Negan, had captured one of their party,
mm-hmm.
and she had died and succumbed to, you know, the zombie virus. So they treated her like a prisoner, had her hands tied behind her back, and had a cloth over her head. And they went to give her back to Rick and his men.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they take the cloth off, of course, she starts biting. I was like, that was clever. They also took all their bladed weapons and, like, scuzzed them up with zombie muck. So that even a small wound would immediately become infected. I mean, in the universe, they're all infected with the zombie virus. If you die of a heart attack, you become a zombie. But a bite or a wound that's, you know, got zombie juice on it will kill you very fast because it's just necrotic, you know, flesh.
Right.
So that's pretty interesting.
Let's say, I just wonder when you're talking about where to take it next, I'm wondering if you're going to see some sort of evolution or de-evolution of the zombie.
I don't know. I mean, I would like to think at some point there's an ending to all this. And I know that for 10 years he's been writing the same story, so I'd imagine it's time to change it up a little.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to keep it going, which I would assume it's a huge cash cow, and it's not like he's ever said he has a planned ending, so you've got to find a way to spice it up, to change the story, to keep it, you know, keep everyone coming back to it.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And it's a compelling, fun story, so check it out.
Dead, folks.
Yeah, if you go to your local library or your local bookstore and get compendiums 1 and 2, that'll catch you up to issue 96. Then it's just a short jaunt from there to being modern in the comics, being up to date. So I highly recommend it to all. It's a well-written, fun series. So
cool.
And it pulls the heartstrings on occasion.
As all good Image Comics should.
Yes, absolutely. Cody Grady.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about our movie of the week, which will probably lead into what we want to talk about in general.
Right.
So the movie of the week is
X-Men First Class.
A film that had started out as X-Men Origins Magneto.
Mm.
So So that's a fun fact. We could have ended up with that. But after the initial fuck-up of X-Men Origins Wolverine, Laura Shuler Donner, the EP of all the X-Men movies, scrapped it. And they went back to the drawing board, and they decided, let's do Origins for a lot of folks.
Yep.
And that's what we got. So we've got the X-Men of the 60s.
Right.
Of course, different from the comics. You know, it's not the original five and Professor X. You have variations of people.
Right.
You do get Beast, which is cool.
Uh-huh.
What was your exposure to this movie? Did you go to the theater and see it? What happened?
So, actually, I first saw X-Men First Class about a month and a half ago. I saw
what
it just...
What the fuck is wrong with you?
The problem is that the Fox X-Men series just kind of kicked me in the teeth about a decade ago with a little movie called X3, and I've never really trusted them since.
If anything, you know what makes X3 fun is that you get to see characterizations of you know, comic characters that you've loved. Like, to see the Beast after having X-Men and X2.
I'm not disagreeing. I mean, I'm not saying it's an awful film, but I don't know why. I just never really liked X3. I just never felt like it was, I don't know. I like the other two much better, put it that way. So since that, for whatever reason, I've never really thought processed it out of why I didn't like X3. There are all the X-Men movies that have come out from Fox. I've just seen a smattering of them here and there. I haven't seen a bunch of them. And so I didn't see First Class until Days of Future Past was coming out, because I'm like, okay, probably should check out First Class. So,
like, let's give them a chance.
I did, because everyone was like, that was the thing, as I kept telling everybody, I was like, I didn't really like X3, so I haven't really seen any X-Men movies since then. And they're like, well, you have to see First Class. Like, I have people who are not comic book people coming up and saying, you haven't seen First Class? It's great. So I'm like, okay, well, probably better get on this bandwagon and see what's up. And it's great. It's a great film.
I love it so much. James McAvoy is amazing in it. Michael Fassbender is amazing in it. And then I like how, because we all thought it was a reboot. Everybody thought it was a reboot. We had no idea it was the same universe. Because we're like, oh, look, there's Beast in the 60s, and there's Mystique in the 60s. You know, and then they just kind of flipped it to make sense in the modern age. And how they tied it in with having, you know, Wolverine in that bar. And then having... having a young Mystique turn into Rebecca Romaine Stamos.
Yeah.
You know, pretty cool stuff.
I think really it's great because it's a period piece. Like, mm-hmm. Everything about it screams the 60s. The fear, you could talk about the fear, the sort of segregation that the X-Men have always sort of, you know, portrayed, both the way Stan Lee wanted them to be and the way they're continued to be used today. Like, that all boils over in the 60s. Like, that's a lot of their origin stories seem really tied to that era.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes perfect sense to actually, you know, set them in that era and use it. The whole Cuban Missile Crisis aspect of it reminded me greatly of the 90s X-Men cartoon when they first meet Magneto and he's trying to take over the military base or whatever. It's,
mm-hmm.
It's war and conflict, and you just throw the X-Men right in the middle of it, and it makes sense. It's a story we've seen before, and it works. It's a great story.
Absolutely. Yeah, something interesting about First Class is the inclusion of Havoc.
Yes.
Now, Alex Summers is the younger brother of Scott, correct?
I believe that is correct. Yeah, because I'm going back to most of my X-Men universe knowledge is based off the 90s cartoon. Mm-hmm. And in the 90s cartoon, when they push him out of the plane, Scott is the older one. So I believe that is correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just curious that he's recruited, he's in military school, and he's like, you know, he's in trouble, he's like in lockup.
Mm-hmm.
This is like what year, 62, right?
Yes, I think that's correct.
Takes place in 62. So, Scott Summers is in X-Men Origins Wolverine, which takes place in the late 70s. So the weird thing is then that the older brother looks, you know, the same age, whatever, 19 years later. It just, that little piece, and then the idea of having William Stryker, played by Brian Cox, Danny Houston, and now this really young guy from the new movie, it just really, really screws with me.
Yeah, it's I mean, we can get to that when we talk about Days of Future Past, but some of the, for wanting to be so concerned with continuity sometimes, they seem to throw it out the window whenever it's inconvenient.
Well, I mean, that's what you do when you have a time travel movie. You can fix everything. Now, X3 never happened.
God.
You know?
Yeah, like, man.
Think of that. Bryan Singer directed the first two, and then he comes back to do this one. He's like, yeah, X-Men Origins Wolverine and X3, I'm going to throw them out the window. Because I'm the ex-director.
It's just, it is interesting, though, that they chose to include Havoc as opposed to including, you know, especially because Cyclops is so iconic as a member of the X-Men.
Like, well, I mean, they couldn't put him in it because they just had him in X-Men Origins Wolverine. So if anybody was doing the math, they would have realized that he would be, like, negative 2 years old.
I suppose that's true. It's just, it's interesting that they used Havoc. The class that they created was not at all what I feel like you would have expected. Not to mention, like you said, the use of Mystique and her relationship with Professor Xavier and whatnot. It was all, I don't know how I feel about that. It's an interesting connection to make, I guess.
Well, you know, they had to do something to tie them together, to make Mystique a part of the world.
Right.
And they didn't want to do it with, like, you know, Wolverine, for instance. Now, in the Ultimate X-Men universe, Mystique and Xavier used to be lovers in the past. So, you know, with the way the Marvel movies are going and connecting more to the Ultimate continuity, or at least characterization, than the, you know, the classic Marvel 616,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't surprise me that they pulled from Ultimate in some senses.
I suppose that's true.
You know, I mean, like, they did the same thing with the Raimi's Spider-Man, making the webs organic.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
I did like the I guess you could call them the bad class. I did like the way they were assembled and the way that they were used. I thought that was really brilliant to use sort of one-offs, lesser known, or even creating new mutants just specifically for those roles, and then the way that it worked out farther on in the movie. Well, that's what I was trying to look. I was trying to remember what their names were.
So there's Banshee, whom we all know is an X-Man.
Right.
Angel.
Yeah.
Which in the comics looks like a fly. She's an insectoid mutant.
Right.
She's not a hot daughter of Lenny Kravitz. there was, of course, Mystique and Beast and Havoc, and then Darwin.
I guess.
Darwin, who's currently on the X roster in the Marvel 616.
I guess
actually, I think what's what is the team X Factor? He's on like X Factor.
Gotcha. I guess not as being as well versed in the X universe. I guess I did not know that Darwin and Angel were both like regular, I guess, participants in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, they're characters. Angel's married to Beak from X Men, and they have children together. And since Beak looks like a bird, she looks like a fly, their children are all sorts of screwed up. they actually hatch out of eggs. It's really screwed up. In Darwin, my first exposure to him was in World War Hulk.
Mm.
After the Hulk came back to Earth, after the Planet Hulk series, mm-hmm. and was taking things over, X-Factor tried to confront him, and the Hulk went on a rampage and was coming straight at them. And so Darwin's mutation is adaptability for survival, right?
Right.
So when his mutant power activated as the Hulk attacked him, it all instead of making him, you know, indestructible diamond or something crazy, it teleported him away because there was no way he could survive the Hulk. I liked that a lot. I thought that was pretty cool.
I guess that's just me not knowing some of these mutants. But I think that once you get to Trask with Days of Future Past, they utilize those characters, I think, in a fascinating way.
Mm-hmm. And now, let's go ahead and talk about Days of Future Past, and let's compare it to the comic.
All right.
Have you read the comic?
I have not.
Well, let me give you a summary here. I have it in front of me.
Gotcha.
It's only a two-issue run.
Hmm.
It was Uncanny X-Men number 141 and 142.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the bound edition that's currently out there on the shelves, it goes, I think it starts at Uncanny X-Men number 138. It just gives you some interesting tidbits of information. Example, it's Kitty Pryde just became an X-Man,
mm-hmm.
and she's scared to death of Nightcrawler, But then when Kitty Pryde is the one in the comics who goes back in time into her old body, not Wolverine. When she goes back in time to her old body, that she wakes up and sees Nightcrawler and freaks out, and she's so excited. And Nightcrawler's like, qu'est-ce que c'est? Except it's in German. So, two issues. It was pretty much the beginning of the greatness that is Chris Claremont.
Mm-hmm. I say Claremont and Byrne, that was...
Mm-hmm.
That's the start of them and all their X-Men awesomeness.
We go to the dystopian future.
Mm-hmm.
Kitty Pryde is one of the few surviving X-Men. There are four surviving X-Men. Wolverine, Kitty Pryde, Colossus, and Scrappy Doo. Oh, Storm. Storm. Wolverine's on the outside. He hasn't been caught yet. The other three have been. They've been made like trustees in a little mutant prison.
Mm.
But they're actually the leaders of the Sentinel Resistance. So Kitty meets up with Wolverine. She gets the device that'll send her consciousness back in time, and they proceed to do that. Now, what they're stopping from happening is they have to stop the assassination of Senator Robert Kelly, which
right.
we all know in the movie X Universe died in the first one.
Yes.
So clearly they had to change some things.
a little bit.
Not to mention they were on their third actress to play Kitty Pryde, so they couldn't really make it all about her. She wasn't nearly as popular as the Wolverine.
Yeah.
So we got that, which is fine. Nothing wrong with it. So in the future, all the rest of the X-Men are dead. The Fantastic Four are dead. The Hulk's dead. Dr. Doom's dead. Black Panther, Spider-Man, Daredevil. The Vision is not operational.
Hmm.
I don't really think he could die. Ghost Rider's dead. The whole Marvel hero universe has been dead. The fun thing is, the present timeline is 1980, so the dystopian future is the year 2013. So guess what? We made it, guys.
Woo! Hooray
yeah.
for the human race.
Skype cut out for a second there, and it sounded like you said the human rape.
Whoop.
Yeah, that was weird. You get to see a pretty cool old man Wolverine power fastball special with Colossus, with old Colossus, who kind of looks like a metal Reed Richards with his gray sideburns. But yeah, so they're going back in time to stop Mystique from assassinating Robert Kelly. She had reformed the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. She had Avalanche, Pyro, Blob, and Destiny, which you might remember those guys as being the Brotherhood from the cartoon series.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole assassination on Senator Robert Kelly before he becomes President Kelly, that was all in the cartoon. That was, like, kind of the catalyst for the series for a while, wasn't it?
As I recall, I think it's late in the first season, or it might be what goes from first to second season, because I think that's the first time you get introduced to Bishop. As I recall, Bishop jumps back in time, and he's like, oh, we have to prevent this, you know, whatever from happening, and that's going to keep us from going into the future. I mean, it's a running thing with all of the X-Men. Wolverine and the X-Men, the new TV show, has the same storyline. The 90s X-Men has the same storyline. They're all ripping off of Claremont and Byrne, as they are wont to do in the modern era with Marvel Comics and the X-Men, because it's a great story.
I'm sorry. I got distracted. I got the weirdest message ever while this is happening. I'm going to read it. Hi, Matt and Sarah. I'm not married to anybody named Sarah, just for the record. Sorry to bother you both. I know you have worked very hard moving your family. Patsy got me the key to the house, went in to take some measurements. The house is full of ants, the kitchen, the living room, the dining room, and laundry room. My son set off some bug bombs. I will get up very early in the morning to air out the house before cleaning people come. So if it smells funny, that's why. I would have waited, but there was hundreds and hundreds. I wish you love and many memories in your new home. Hugs to all. Jerry, P.S. What the fuck is Jerry? Yeah, sorry, but I was a little disappointed that access door to crawl space wasn't repaired from the inspection man. He broke it that day. It has water issues. Okay. Who the fuck is this? Oh, the mystery. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's continue. Sidebar over.
Oh, the edits.
Yeah. You don't even have to edit that. That was my fuck up, man. What did you say about the show?
The 90s X-Men uses a similar storyline with Bishop. The new series, Wolverine and the X-Men, which I think is the anime-looking style, they use one where Professor X is in a coma and
mm-hmm,
he, like, mentally goes back to warn Wolverine and the X-Men to keep away from, you know, some sort of dystopian future. They're just sort of ripping off of, you know, Claremont and Byrne over and over again as much as they can, because it's a great story.
I would, don't say rip off. I mean, you know, they're flipping it. They're they're transmitting mediums. They're trying to make it work. You know, see what? F you, man.
I just love when it just cracks me up. I mean, I understand why they do, because people love Days of Future Past. So it's like, oh, let's see it in a lot of different versions. It's just like, you guys know you're kind of taking it from Claremont and Byrne, right? Like, they came up with this. It's just, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to me that it's a 2-issue series, and you can pick out probably a dozen storylines without even trying of things where they've basically done the same thing that these two guys pioneered with 2 issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's very true. Very true. But Bishop, it's funny you brought him up. So when we found out Bishop was going to be in the movie, it's kind of like a WTF, because the storyline that they did in the X-Men cartoon show had Bishop as a character as well.
Yeah.
He's not in Days of Future Past at all. He is the time-traveling X-Man. Like, don't get me wrong, he's from the weird dystopian future, but we don't have to see it. Like, he's not essential to the story, so I don't even know why they included him in Days of Future Past, but whatever, it works.
I don't know why. I mean, it's clear who Bishop is, you know. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah, if you know any X-lore, you know who Bishop is.
I agree. I mean, you're sort of right. Why is he a part of this? I couldn't tell you, but he is.
Hey, you know, here's a fun thing. So, Destiny, in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, is the friend and one-time lover of Mystique.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's Nightcrawler's mommy, and the daddy is Azazel, which we, in Days of Future, in First Contact, when the bad mutants leave, you know, she's with Azazel. And I'm like, oh, they're going to make a baby! And then we find out in Days of Future Past that Azazel's dead, which is tragic as shit. But do you know what what they were originally going to do for Nightcrawler's parentage in the X-Men? Mystique would have gone into the form of a man and inseminated Destiny.
Whoa.
But that was so creeptacular they decided not to do it.
That is a dark place you can take Mystique's powers.
Yeah. You can go from superhero comic book to tranny porn in about 3 minutes with a decent writer. So, good for them.
Wow.
Yeah, beyond that, I mean, other differences. Jean Grey had just died in the 1980s. So Cyclops is still getting over that. So he's not even really in this. He's in, like, the opening pages of it.
Right.
Oh, no, he's not. I'm sorry. He's in, like, issue 138. I remember I just read it. I don't know. Kitty Pryde and Colossus are still in love in the future. That's kind of nice. Beyond that, there's, you know, they're completely different stories. You know, you have the Nimrod Sentinels in the movie and the comic. They just look like the regular everyday Sentinels.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if had the Nimrod Sentinels been created at that point in Marvel history?
I don't believe so. It takes another. I don't think the Nimrods. I don't think you see them until the storyline that involves Bishop.
Gotcha.
To where we meet Bishop. So.
Gotcha.
Je ne sais pas. You do got to give credit, though, how they did the, you know, Bishop had that M over his eye.
Yeah.
Marking him as a mutie. Well, they don't have that in the comics, but you got to like how they did that in the movie. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a solid film. Days of Future Past it's fun and entertaining. It's just,
oh, yeah.
Like you said, it's such a total, you know, it's got a lot of differences from the original storyline. Some of which we've talked about are necessary. Others, it's like, wait, why? Why did we change this? Why is it important to make these differences?
You know, if we went back in time right now to 1980, and Claremont and Byrne are working on this story, if they could have known how pivotal it would be for the X universe in the future, this would have been a year-long event. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the way they write comics now, there's never a 1 or 2 issue story. They're all 6 to 12 or more.
And they have to relate to everything else. Everything's got to make, you know, sense in the continuity. Whereas, you know, in the 80s, didn't really matter. Could make sense, could not make sense. We're just going to write this cool, you know, 2-issue story. And it spawned into almost a trope for the X-Men for the next 30-some years. Because they're always traveling through time, screwing shit up, and making a big muck about with timelines.
Blah, blah, blah.
And that's what drives me nuts. Drives me nuts.
I've always felt Apocalypse was the scariest X-Men villain.
Hmm.
He legitimately frightened me as a child watching the cartoon. I was like, how they can't defeat him. There's just no way. You know, his body immediately repairs damage. He can change his size. He can, he's immortal. He's whatever, 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing they can do. He wins. Hands down. Because of that, like, well, just my love of Apocalypse as a villain, even though Magneto's killed him like 3 times in the comics. Do you think the upcoming X-Men Apocalypse will be just a modern story with Apocalypse in it? Or maybe even a, like, 1980s story, so we can use the first-class actors and actresses that are all really good? Or is it going to be like an Age of Apocalypse thing, where they tie in these two timelines again?
Oh, man. I think if I were the exec, if I think I were the producer, the easy movie to make is the, okay, they just keep jumping forward in time. So we did sort of our 60s movie. We've done sort of our 70s movie. Let's do like our late 70s, early 80s movie and just involve more time travel. Because you can bring Apocalypse to the 80s. You can throw them back into ancient Egypt. You can throw them into the future. You can play with it that way without having to screw with the timeline you've already set up. That being said, they like screwing with the timeline, so I'm sure they're going to do it.
So, I mean, do you think it'll be the way it is in the comics, where Legion goes back in time and kills Professor Xavier, and then that leads into the Age of Apocalypse, because that's the moment then when Apocalypse decides to make his play for taking over humanity?
I don't know. I would, as an exec, I think you would be hesitant to get rid of either James McAvoy or Michael Fassbender if they can get him for the next film. Assuming they're using that class.
Well, what about Jennifer I Like to Win Oscars Lawrence?
That's true.
And Nicholas Holt. Nicholas Holt has been in the past 3 years, his movies have made like $1.5 billion. I'm not even making that up. He was in Jack the Giant Slayer, which did like 250 mil. He was in this X-Men movie, which is, I think, at like 700 mil right now. He was in Warm Bodies. That did well.
I would think they would want to use as much of this cast as possible. It seems to me first class almost seems to exist in a bubble. I mean, it doesn't necessarily directly tie. I mean, it's got some connections, but they're almost, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but other than the Wolverine tie-in, is there any major tie-in in First Class to the established Fox film continuity?
Jennifer Lawrence becoming Rebecca Romijn.
Okay.
She pictures herself being older.
Gotcha.
God. I mean, that and Magneto getting his helmet that blocks psychic waves.
Right.
You know, they talk about, not much else. Them playing chess together.
See, what I almost wonder is like you talk about Bryan Singer. I mean, you're making a joke earlier, I assume. But it seems like with the second film, Bryan Singer's like, okay, I'm establishing a new trilogy, or I'm adding on to this story now. Because with Days of Future Past, I mean, it inherently requires it because of the story. But you've got a much bigger tie between, you know, the future and its actions with, you know, Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. And then you've got the past stuff, which, you know, it's got McAvoy and Fassbender. But then you have this little bit at the end where you're saying, yeah, that Phoenix stuff probably didn't happen, and we're going to get rid of this part, and now we're going to just work it into the storyline so that that first trilogy plus these movies are all now in a line. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where I was really going with this, but I would assume that they're going to try and keep using that synergy from Day of the Future Past as they move forward.
Yeah.
Especially if it makes them a lot of money, which it probably is going to do.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see, huh? Play the waiting game.
But I love I don't know about you, I love, I mean, we talk about Michael Fassbender and our love for him on The Brothel, but his humane version of Magneto, I think, is brilliant.
Except, I mean, at the end of Days of Future Past, I think he's more megalomaniacal and murderous than Ian McKellen ever played.
I agree, but I think that it's not illogical that he's in that place. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you see him in his sort of, their sort of tiff at the end of, First Class. And then that whole scene, I guess I'm really talking about the scene on the plane where they're talking and you see this evolution and you can see the dichotomy between Xavier and, and Eric and how they're two sides of the same coin. They're trying to get the same thing. They're just going at it from different tactics. And I think it's great to see that rise of Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? As opposed to just being, herder, I'm a bad guy. I want to do bad things. You know, it's really beautifully played because you feel for the guy, even if he is going to, try and murder the president with his magnetic powers.
For the record, 6 days ago, Simon Kinberg, writer of Days of Future Past, revealed that X-Men Apocalypse will be set in 1983.
Yeah, there you go.
So look at you. You're some kind of psychic, sir.
I may or may not have read that.
Oh, fair enough.
I was just saying, but you're
pretending it was your own idea now. I see it. I see your game. All right, Grady.
I was saying, for some reason, I have a feeling that Lucas or someone else may have posted something like that on the brothel. Because I was like, that, when you asked me that question, I was like, 80s. It's got to be the 80s, right? And I was like, did I read that somewhere? Nah, we'll play it off as my own idea.
You dick. That's great.
So what did you think of the inclusion of Quicksilver now into the Fox X-Men universe?
That was my favorite part of the whole movie.
Oh my God.
I mean, that was the most fun part,
So much fun.
Oh my God. Just I'm assuming he had to play the tape on high speed so that it sounded normal when he was running fast, but I don't know. Evan Peters did an amazing job with the character.
Yep.
His portrayal and just he like just the little nuances. He talked fast, but not so fast it would be irritating.
Yeah.
He just talked fast. It was cute. And then the best line in the whole movie is, "Oh, you can move metal? My mom used to know a guy like that." Hilarious.
I lost it. Myself and I think a couple other people in my party and maybe a few others laughed. And of course, my brother poked me and was like, "What is that?" I was like, "That's because it's his dad." She's like, "Oh." She's like, "They never said that." I was like, "No, it's a comic book thing." Yeah. It was.
I love the nods.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant. It's interesting, though, because as we talked about on our Captain America episode, we've seen who we assume are Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch.
Mm-hmm. So, and as Baron von Strucker tells us in that scene, just that it's a dawning of a new age and people are being born with powers. They're not calling them mutants. They're not going to use the X gene because that's all being run by Fox. Right. So that's how you're able to take a character like Quicksilver and use him in both X-Men and the Avengers.
It's just, it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out because surely I think both Fox and Disney are going to be, they're clearly both vying to utilize the character Quicksilver. And I wonder what the general populace will think of that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Something we won't really be able to make a call on until we see it. But is Avengers 2 is next summer.
Yeah.
And then Apocalypse will be in 2016. So we'll have to just wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, we have no idea what they're going to use. In my opinion, I think that the Quicksilver character in Cap 2 is just there so that it's Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch. I think they're going to utilize the Scarlet Witch to do who knows what. But anytime she gets involved in a storyline, things just, kind of go sideways real fast.
Yeah. Crazy bitch.
She is. She's an awesome character, but if there's anyone else, there's no one better in the Marvel Universe, I think, that represents Deus Ex Machina than Scarlet Witch.
Every time you say Deus Ex Machina, part of my soul dies. What does that mean again?
Machine of the Gods. It's a theater term.
For what?
Well, and
there's no machines, right?
Well, back in when they used to do Greek plays, they wanted somebody to do, and they wanted somebody to be a god.
You know what they called those in Greece?
What?
Plays.
Oh, yeah, it's true. When they did those plays in ancient Greece, they had a crane that was supposed to symbolize characters who were gods, and it sort of swung out over the set, and that was called Deus Ex Machina, the Machine of the Gods. Now it's used mostly as a literary term to mean the hand of God being involved in the story. So when you need something to happen, like, oh no, it's horrible, we're never going to pay off the farm, and it's like, ding dong, oh here, you've won the lottery, Deus Ex Machina.
Okay.
The outside hand of, outside forceful creative hand going.
Saving seemingly miraculous.
Exactly. The Machine of the Gods.
Cool.
So yeah, when you need something to, you know, it's like, oh man, because they do, obviously they do it when she says no more mutants. And they do it in Avengers vs. X-Men a couple summers ago when she says, you know, no more Phoenix. It's just like, meh, go away. We're done now. We don't have a good ending, so make this disappear. Magic.
Did you ever read the What If, What If the Scarlet Witch said no more superhumans? Yeah, it's just, you know, a little one-shot. Fun, though. Real fun. You guys should look that up.
Scarlet Witch. Just...
Or is this, yeah, it's no more powers.
Ah.
And it takes away everybody's superpowers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, what, anything else that you would like to cover? What are you thinking about? I mean, do you approve of Peter Dinklage as, Dr. Trask?
I do. I mean, in the comic, Bolivar Trask is an anthropologist. He is not a big scientist, but whatever.
Really? Because I don't know if he's, I'm pretty sure, again, going back to my 90s references here, I, for some reason, I always thought he was a major.
Yeah, in the cartoons, he made the Sentinels too.
Yeah, yeah, but so in the comic books, that does not follow, that is what you're saying.
Correct. He's an anthropologist. He does see the need for something. He is the advisor to Senator Kelly about the X gene.
Gotcha.
But yeah, he's an anthropologist, not a, I don't know, a physicist or whatever you'd call him.
I did like when Mystique, and I alluded to this earlier, when you go and she researches his files and you see that he's worked on all these mutants and you see them in the camps at Vietnam, you know, being transferred and stuff. I do like the idea that, that somehow Peter Dinklage yet again is being a manipulative little bastard and just kind of ruining, you know, these mutants' lives.
Or shooting his father on the shitter. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
yeah, you know what? The other thing that they introduce at the very last, like, panel of Days of Future Past is the introduction of Henry Peter Gyrich.
Gotcha.
So, and this was before he was, like, the government liaison to mutants. This was, like, when he was a dick. So.
Because he's not a dick later.
Well, I mean, he's a jerk, but he's not, like, trying to kill them. So, there's that.
No, but overall, I think it's a great movie. I think that the Fox X-Men movies have taken a bad rap over the last, you know, with the exclusion of First Class and what was the other one that was really good?
The Wolverine.
The Wolverine, yeah. As you know, they've gotten away from the X3 and the, you know, the Origins Wolverine, whatever they called it, X-Men Origins Wolverine. And now I think Singer is making good stuff.
He is. And, you know, he's doing the smart move. Wolverine's a big character, so he puts Wolverine in the forefront.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence is an Oscar-winning actress that's just on fire. She's in everything. So let's make Mystique one of the main characters in this story instead of just an assassin. So, you know, it was a compelling piece of work. It was enjoyable. I'll be buying it on Blu-ray the day it comes out. Faux show.
It was good. It was, I mean, I loved when... I know the moment it clicked when he picked up that stadium, what he was going to do, I was like, this is epic. This is exactly what you want from a summer blockbuster film, you know? Rampant wanton destruction and people dying and explosions, and it's a good summer flow.
Fire trucks and hookers and booze. Sorry. That's from Bachelor.
He party hard.
Or Bachelor Party, it's called. Yeah, when this comes out in the cheap theaters, I'm probably going to go see it again, so maybe we'll do a Brothel Day at the movies.
Yeah, maybe we can find a couple of other things that are, you know, little interesting tidbits to talk about.
Yeah. All right, then, ladies and gentlemen, from here at the brothel, we salute you. We will see you again next week, hopefully, unless something comes up. just as always, you know, keep on listening to Follow Networks. Go to iTunes, look up the Follow Networks podcast, listen to them, give a 5-star rating and review the show. You can check out everything at www.followthe.tv, and don't forget to check out Bovine at the Androids Dungeon in Avon, Indiana.
Yeah, and be sure to, you know, check us out on Facebook, like the Rancor's Brothel. Let us know what you thought of Days of Future Past or any other random nerd stuff that gets dropped on there. We really appreciate it, so come talk to us at or on Facebook, the Rancor's Brothel.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you.
Excelsior.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part.